This is KBOO Portland. It is 11:01 and time for Mr. Jones's Neighborhood with your host, Mr. Jones. No ventilated slacks, though.
Good morning, neighbor. I'm glad we're together again. We have a very special show for you today on Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, the children's program for reluctant adults. I'm the host of Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, Ken Jones, no relation, by the way. On today's show, for what's become an annual, though totally inadvertent, tradition on Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, we celebrate Portland's Waterfront Blues Festival. The festival features 50-plus performers, some famous and some soon to be over 4 days, and is now in its 32nd year. Mr. Jones had a Maytag washer that lasted that long but caught fire soon after and is no longer in service. Fortunately, that's not the case with the Blues Festival. As usual, KBOO will be live broadcasting all 4 days of the festival, July 4th through the 7th from noon to 10 p.m. And, as usual, our special Mr. Jones's Neighborhood Blues Fest edition guest is the amazing Oregon-born and bred singer-songwriter-guitarist Ty Curtis. And we also welcome the equally amazing Ryan Stadler, who plays bass in the Ty Curtis Band and the Ty Curtis Duo, who we'll hear today. We'll preview the band's appearance at the festival this year, and if we're nice, Ty and Ryan will play a few tunes for us live in the KBOO studios. We'll also be talking to Lisa Loving, longtime Portland journalist and currently KBOO's News and PM Public Affairs Director, about her new book, Street Journalist, Understand and Report the News in Your Community. Lisa won't be performing at the Blues Festival, but she will be reading at Powell's Books in downtown Portland this Sunday, June 2nd at 7:30 p.m., So it's blues and news on today's Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, which I think is the only time we were able to rhyme the show's topics. Another first. First, the blues part. Ty Curtis and Ryan Stadler, welcome to KBOO.
Ken, thanks for having us on, man.
Yes, yes.
Oh, Ty, this is always my pleasure, and it's become a tradition, so this is your third appearance on the show.
Yeah.
Each time a little before Blues Festival, and you'll be appearing there this year. But last time we talked, you had moved to Austin, Texas, and you still live there part of the year? How does that work? So winter's in Austin when the weather's good and summer here in Oregon?
Yeah, exactly. Most of the work that I'm doing right now is up here from like end of June till about September. About September 28th is like when it starts to kind of peter off a little bit. But yeah, I'll be spending some time here with my wife for about a little less than a month, and then I'm back up here for the long run.
including the Blues Festival appearance and a number of other dates.
Yep,
that you've
absolutely
already got scheduled. Now, how do you spend the time in Austin? Is that writing, performing, recording?
Yeah, I do that. I'm working on getting into the studio. We've got a lot of new songs. We're actually going to play some of those today for you. But yeah, no, I do a lot of bike riding, keeping myself in shape, and keeping our house together. My wife's working really hard, and so I'm keeping some of the household stuff together.
You said she's at a NASCAR track down there.
She works
and she's meeting some big names, not just in NASCAR, but in music.
Circuit of Americas, and she got to talk to Paul Rogers from Bad Company, and I was like, what was he like? And she's like, he's the sexiest 69-year-old I've ever seen.
Man, that should be his next album.
Yeah.
It's got to be a song.
Continue to look young.
Now, has the Texas influence creeped in at all to your music?
I want to say it has a little bit, like being around artists like Dave Scherr. Let's like kind of jump into him.
Oh, we'll talk about him because you'll be performing at Blues
with the
Fest
Waterfront.
With
but he's a tremendous guitar player, being around players like him and Jeff Plankenhorn, Carolyn Wonderland, and people that are absolutely killer in Austin, and many more. There's so many great artists there, but
lot of different musical styles. I mean, we kind of know it since it's Texas is country western or a Willie Nelson outlaw country type,
right?
But there's a Texas blues style too, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. Kind of Lance Lopez is one of the leaders in that blues rock sound in the South. Very cool artist people should check out. But you can't help but have it rub off on you when you're around that great, you know, artistry.
Yeah, I'm interested. Is there such a thing as an Oregon blues, like a Texas blues? Is there a style here?
I don't know. I mean, definitely with less twang, and nobody says like y'all. Everyone and you guys. Instead, we say all y'all down there. It seems would be weird if we're hanging out with, you know, Texas-born people and we say you guys. They're like, what?
And we're all paralyzed at four-way stops up here too. It's probably not in Texas.
Yeah, they have some crazy thunderstorms, which actually I was enjoying on my birthday recently, and man, we saw like monsoon rain, and my wife out of the Circuit of Americas, they had a tornado warning, and it's kind of wild being there in that weather.
We had a funnel cloud here about 2 weeks ago. It was really unusual.
That's scary.
Yeah, it did a little damage, but nothing like a Texas tornado, I'm sure.
Maybe like that one was like an F0, but I know stuff has been dropping like in some of the other counties up north. It's scary weather for sure.
Now, since this is the special Waterfront Blues Festival edition of the show,
yes,
we should probably talk a little about the
festival. Sure, yeah. I like weather, too. Maybe I should have been a weatherman.
Ty Curtis with the weather coming up next.
Right, yeah.
This is your sixth or seventh appearance at the festival, right?
It is, yeah. This is a different configuration for us. We're going to be bringing guitarist and musician extraordinaire Dave Scher. He's a Berklee graduate. He's plays with so many different artists down there and really hailed as one of the best. And we're really excited to have him on. We're going to be featuring half his songs and half our songs. A lot of my records have like double parts and stuff that when I worked with Jacob Peterson or when I've tracked against.
So you'll have the dual
the songs
guitars.
Myself. Yeah. So Dave has learned the parts for the on the record. And because normally I run as a trio, you know, financially.
Oh, right.
But, yeah, it'll be really nice to have the addition of his playing and the caliber of tone and, yeah, ferocity that he brings.
And, Ryan, you'll be there, too. Is this your first appearance at the Waterfront Blues Festival?
This will actually be my third, but first on the main stage, which is going to be awesome. Most people I've ever played for, so looking forward to that.
Where were you previously? There's a front porch stage.
I was on the Crossroads stage, which is the small one, but I was I played there 2 years in a row with Timothy James, so that was really fun.
Do you know Timothy then?
Yep.
I met him last year at Cathedral Park Jazz Festival. He came by because KBOO also live broadcast that festival. That's later in July than the Blues Festival. And he's, like Ty was, a guitar prodigy.
Yep.
What is he now, 18 or 19?
17.
Oh, 17.
I'm pretty sure.
He doesn't look like it.
Guitars, yeah. Kind of older than his years, maybe.
Right.
But definitely. You were there with Timothy James.
Yep.
So is there anybody in particular you're looking forward to seeing this year, Ryan?
At the Blues Fest? Mm-hmm. Honestly, just can't stop thinking about playing. Robert Cray's going to be there, so that'll be really cool.
Right. I actually wanted to mention a few of the names here. Trombone Shorty, Robert Cray, of course. Yeah. Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, Shamika Copeland, Chubby Carey, who is there almost every year.
I love him, yeah.
He's playing Zydeco. Awesome. He plays the washboard.
I know his guitarist, Randy. He's really great. To hang out with them last year. And
wow. Did you ever play with him? Do you ever jam?
Haven't, but I'm really tempted, like, when I get the time to go to Louisiana from Texas and meet up with him and stuff. That'd be really great.
Yeah, you do different styles. I know you have one song that has some reggae influence to it. I think that's on Blame Me.
Yeah. I got influenced when I went to the islands. Also, the Northwest Reggae Festival, I got to see Luciano, who's one of my favorites. So that kind of crept in on my style. And I probably won't put a reggae song on the next album. But
that might happen if you go down to Louisiana. You get a little Cajun Zydeco.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. The accordion and all that good stuff. Washboard.
Washboard, I think, is the only instrument I could play.
Oh, right.
but not well. I can just scratch.
Nice.
I wonder if there's like classes. There must be. I wanted to mention a few of the other names. Curtis Salgado, who's there often. He's actually one of the founding performers.
Absolutely.
Of the Blues Festival. California Honey Drops, Larkin Poe, who was there last year. They were fantastic. I think they're sisters.
Yeah. Great act.
Sugar Ray Rayford, who's been around for a while.
He's killing it.
Yeah, Lydia Pence and Cold Blood, they had a hit when I was in high school, so I don't know what they're like now. LaRonda Steele, Karen
great.
Lovely, local too. Roy Rogers and the Delta Rhythm Kings, Earl Thomas and the Pain, he's local. Lisa Mann and Laura Price, you probably know them.
Exactly.
Terry Robb, I know you know.
Yep. We just did a show with him over at the Coast, and yeah, he's tremendous. His playing is like virtuosic. He's crazy good.
And we talked about this before we went on the air, Ty, but one of your favorites of mine, Kingfish, Christone.
Absolutely, yeah.
Will be performing there, and he finally has a CD out.
I'm looking forward to hearing it, yeah. I heard like a little clip, and I just haven't gotten to listen to the album yet.
Oh, we'll play that at the end of the show.
Awesome.
One of the tracks, the first track on the CD. But you played with him and Samantha Fish 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You were billed as the Young Guns of guitar.
Yeah.
He just turned 20. Does that make you feel old?
Yeah, definitely. I'm 32, so it definitely makes me feel old.
But I'm twice your age. And
I'm really happy for all the things that I've done and places we've played and being able to play with Christone, and you know, Samantha's killing it, you know, and he just put out the song with Buddy Guy. Is that the one you're gonna play? I heard it.
Oh, I wonder if Buddy Guy's on that one. He's on the album.
Cool.
I'm not sure on the one we're gonna play, but
yeah, I'm excited to
hear
that.
I highly recommend the album, and that will be available finally at the Blues Festival.
Nice.
I know the guy Terry from Music Millennium has been complaining the past few years he could have sold a ton of Kingfish CDs if he had them.
Yeah.
So this is a long time
for both people. Yeah.
A long time in coming. Now, Ryan, I want to ask you a little bit about, and we got into this a little bit about this before he went on the air, how you picked up the bass. You said you started in school bands with the trumpet.
Yep, that's right. And then I moved on to euphonium, which is like a small tuba. And then my eighth grade year, started picking up the bass and playing it on my own. And my band director loved having a bass player, so kept me with it.
And that was school band music.
Yep.
Did you later get into blues and rock, or was that at the same time you were in the school band?
About my freshman year. We kind of got hints of it in our middle school years, but my freshman year when I joined jazz band is when I really started getting into that kind of music and picking up the upright bass and learning all those old tunes and the old blues standards from the real book and stuff. It's really fun.
Do you remember your first band that you put together with you on the electric bass?
Yeah, one of the first ones that I really officially started playing with was a four-piece that had two tenor sax players and myself and the drummer, so that was really fun. It was
two tenor sax players?
Yeah.
Well, it's like Chicago.
It was
something.
Awesome. Yeah, they were the main melody, and it was a really good time. It was interesting having that as the forefront and just having me in the backing rhythm section. It was really fun.
How did you connect with Ty and become part of the Ty Curtis band?
Jerry Jaques actually hit me up on Facebook to ask me to come audition for one of these shows, and Ty saw me play wasn't at Catfish Lou's or
yeah, I've seen you there, and okay. I saw you at the Waterfront.
Oh, nice!
Stalking the videos, of course, online. Yep. And
YouTube. Yeah, yeah. Timothy James got me a lot of exposure. His dad takes a lot of videos and posts them everywhere.
I met his dad. Yeah,
he's awesome. Yeah, James.
Yeah.
And Timothy was great to talk with. Jerry, we should mention, he's been here twice before.
Uh-huh.
With Ty playing acoustic guitar and Jerry on the cajon, the drum box, live in the studio. He's recovering from surgery. Ty just said he's going to be released from the hospital today and recuperate, so we hope he's back playing with the band soon.
Definitely, yeah. He'll be at Waterfront Blues Fest, so we're really looking forward to that.
And Jerry, if you're listening, we miss you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hopefully next time we have the band on, we'll have you here too. Now, Ty, your latest CD of new music is Blame Me, so that was 2016.
Yeah.
Selected as one of the top 10 blues rock albums of the year by Blues Rock Review. In the same company of Joe Bonamassa, Jeff Beck, Devin Allman.
Yeah,
so
pretty
that's
amazing.
Incredibly prestigious. And I was going to ask, are you working on a new album? But you pretty much said that you are. You've got some new songs.
Yes. Yeah. We're definitely close. I have an investor if I want to go that route, or I might do some crowdfunding. I just kind of have to see how it goes. But really excited about the new tunes. We're going to play some of them today, and yeah, it's just nice to play fresh material and keep it exciting.
Yeah, in fact, during the, I guess it was a sound check for the engineers who set you up, I listened to you guys play a full tune as a duo, and it just works perfectly.
Awesome. Appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I miss Jerry, but I think the audience will still be very pleased. I want to talk about that because a few of your upcoming shows tonight, you'll be at the Halfpenny Public House in Salem.
Yep.
Tomorrow, my neighborhood, the Taste of Tigard.
That's right.
And you're playing around 1:30 or so.
That's correct.
And then Sunday, the Hoppy Brewer.
Yep, that one's really fun too. Another, Gresham. Ryan and I are going to do another duo there, just like they'll hear on the radio here today.
But so, where can listeners find out, well, not just about your music, but your upcoming events and where you'll be this summer in Portland?
Yeah, so tycurtis.net/shows has all our full schedule. Also, like on our Facebook and Instagram, I'm pretty active on those as well. So you can get it from multiple sources.
Now, Ty and Jerry, it'd be a shame to spend the whole time talking when we have you two great musicians in the studio. Everything's all set up. We'll just play some music, actually a cut from Ty's Blame Me, and that's, I keep getting it wrong, but it's Back Again, which is one of my favorite cuts on the CD.
Thanks,
the music engineering crew, Steve and Jeffrey, set everything up. So what we'll do is we'll go to that song, Sonia, and then get you guys set up in the back room, and the next sounds you hear will be Ty and Jerry live after the CD. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry.
Jerian.
Jerian.
Jerian, right?
I'm Jerry and Ryan today.
Actually, yes, he'll be taking some of Jerry's parts. Exactly. We mentioned that during the sound check.
I have some coffee right here. Would you like some?
Oh, Jerian, right? Oh, I'm getting the T-shirt. I'm sorry about that, but we'll get you guys set up.
Thanks, Ken. Right. Appreciate you having us on, man.
For those of you wondering, this is Ty Curtis and Ryan Stadler live on KBOO Portland.
If you wanna come and go, babe, how could you ever make me stay? If you wanna come and go, babe, before we start, it'll be too late. Whisper and you get to know me, reassure me it's okay. But you're cheating and I know it, with a friend that used to be. So, so long, farewell. I'm gone and I won't be back, but I wish you well. So long, I can't tell that you will never ever break this spell. No, you won't, babe, nah. Making up a false impression, telling me what I need. Say to me you'll learn your lesson, but I know the joke's on me. And you disappear without me knowing, break the trust that we need. Always come home and you're glowing, and I know it ain't from me. So, so wish you well. So long, I can't tell that you will never ever break this spell. And you can't break me, baby. I'm not gonna let you change me. You can't shame me, lady. Not the way it will.
One now, it's called Turn the Page.
You turn the page and it shifts my mind. It might never be the same. You turn the page and it shifts my mind. You hold and gain. The more you lied, the less I felt. It told me such foolish thing. How could you say it was justified? I was caught up in what I thought love could bring. Now don't wanna be the one to walk away, but I might have to. Don't wanna cause a big mistake. Heaven sent. Now you don't hold your own. Sure as ever did, you circumvent. There's more to what you know. Don't wanna be the one to walk away, but I might have to. Don't wanna cause a big mistake, but I might have to. It doesn't have in this place.
Sounds great, boys. Keep it going.
Thanks, man. We got one more. This is called Cut and Run. In the low key of drop E. Thanks for listening out there, guys.
Cut! so upside down. It weighs on my mind heavy. And silence from you is the only sound. Cause see, we never had a good run. At times it sure was fun. And you think you really know someone. But what's done is done. It's time to cut and run. Cut and run. It's time to cut and run. Cut and run.
Thank you so much. Good to go? All right. Thank you so much, you guys. My name is Ty Curtis. Ryan Stadler on the bass. Ty Curtis Duo, please catch us at the Waterfront Blues Festival on July 6th, 4 to 5 o'clock.
Welcome back to Mr. Jones's Neighborhood here on KBOO Community Radio, or KBOO Neighborhood Radio, as I like to call it. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation. You know, it's a tough job following Ty and Ryan, but that's child's play for our next guest. We're happy to have Lisa Loving with us. Lisa's an award-winning journalist and media activist and currently KBOO's News and PM Public Affairs Director. Lisa has reported for Wire Magazine, The Oregonian, The New York Times, and she was news editor of The Scanner, an African-American family-owned newspaper serving Portland and Seattle. Lisa shares her journalism experience and evangelizes for the participation of all of us, people like you and me, in the reporting of the news. In her new book, Street Journalists, Understand and Report the News in Your Community. Lisa will be reading and signing books at Powell's in downtown Portland this Sunday, June 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Lisa Loving, welcome to the neighborhood.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa, let's begin with a little of your extensive background as a journalist. How did you get your start? Did you go to journalism school, any formal study?
You know, I've been a journalist since I was a kid. I first wrote for publication for my high school newspaper when I was 14 years old. I was a freshman in high school, but I knew I wanted to be a journalist from the time I was in elementary school. I always knew I wanted to be a journalist.
Now, we won't get into your whole history because there's a lot there, but I mentioned you were a news editor of The Scanner, and that was for about 10 years, so yeah. A long period of your career. Yeah. How'd you get the job, and what were your responsibilities as news editor?
Interesting about that. I also, for anyone who's ever heard of the Portland Alliance newspaper, I was the editor of the Portland Alliance newspaper back in the 1980s, which used to be a social change newspaper that was created by local organizations to cover their issues. We could use it now. I applied for a job at The Scanner, which is, again, an African-American family-owned newspaper. And Bobby Dory Foster, the executive editor, told me at the time that she only hired me because she saw my experience at the Alliance because she needed someone who could understand social issues. So kind of my grassroots, almost social change experience as a reporter got me that job. But the, you know, working at The Scanner changed my life. It changed how I look at everything. And when I got that job, white woman, middle-aged white woman at an African-American newspaper, I had oceans of experience in newspapering, community newspapering, production, how to, you know, everything. But I knew from the beginning that I would be trying to tell stories that I could never experience myself. And this bothered me, right? How will I know what's real as I go out here? And I had lived in Portland already for 15 years, so I know the city. But what I, in the end, what I did was I decided that I was going to find touchstones, people in the community that I trust and whose perspectives I trust. And that's what I did. I found a handful of touchstones that I could talk to, that I could call at any time and say, what do you think about what the city council's doing? Or what do you think about what this one guy just said? And so to be able to have an organized, rooted reality check multiple reality checks. That's what really made that job possible, I think. But the other thing is, and this is a very controversial thing that I'm going to say right now, when I selected those touchstones and I figured out that this was a system that I could use as a white person navigating an African and African-American landscape, basically, which is so different in the city of Portland and Seattle, so different what Black people deal with it compared to white people. It's mind-boggling sometimes. But for that reason, I decided that I would commit myself to doing what I thought my touchstones, what my touchstones told me to do. Instead of just saying, I'm going to listen to them and do what I want to do, I committed to myself that if one of these people was going to stand up and say, you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't write that story, or you should write this story, I was going to do what they said. And I think that that was key in my ability to do that job at all. And, you know, after I worked there as a reporter for a couple of years, I was hired as the news editor. And we retooled everything at the Scanner, the website. The Scanner had the first news website in the history of the state of Oregon. A lot of people don't realize that.
What year was that?
It was in the 80s, I believe.
Wow, amazing.
And the reason that the Scanner got this website is because a really key person on the staff loves Star Trek. For real. It's like back then people didn't. They didn't even see the value of the web, but it was just something that was interesting. But anyway, so as we rebuilt, retooled what we did, you know, the Great Recession, like in around 2005, 2007, it really leveled a lot of the economies in our local communities. But at the Scanner, we were able to retool what we did, reach out to our communities, and make our digital platform work, even though people worried about what was called the digital divide, where, you know, some communities of people of color, some communities of people of color are not believed to have the same access or interaction with media. However, what I think is interesting in retrospect is that now African-American community is uniquely connected to the internet. It's just not on computers like, you know, like a lot of other people. So as we wheeled out what we did at the Scanner, we actually figured out that we were in a sweet spot of putting digital news out there, and people pulled it in on their phones. So it was key that we created a very early iPhone, a telephone app, a digital phone app for our news, which was really a big deal. So it was a kind of an interesting experience, and that's always going to be my home. I really miss the Scanner.
Now, a lot of that hard-earned experience over those years of the Scanner, and also when you were a news director in your first stint at KABU, you're in your second stint now.
I'm an interim.
You share a lot of that knowledge and experience in the book, Street Journalist. First, let's get into the term itself, street journalist. Why is it such an important role today?
You know, this term is really, it was hard to find. You know, I started writing this book in, I think it was 2015. What year is it now? And at first it was called Citizen Journalist. And I said to my wonderful publishers, Microcosm Publishing, based in Portland, global distribution now, Joe Beal, right? That's his brainchild. I said to Joe, I don't feel comfortable with this term, but I can't come up with a better. So when I first pitched the book and they bought it, they wanted it, what we were reaching for was sort of a do-it-yourself guide to everyday people so that everyday people could have a hand in journalism, right? Because we're seeing an unbelievable collapse in media systems all over the United States. It's not just newspapers, but newspapers signaled the first collapse, I think, in my opinion.
And also a conglomeration, even in your television, broadcast, radio. There's one company that's buying up almost every other station.
Right. So why it's important to be able to empower people, everyday people, with the tools of journalism is that our systems aren't working. And we have just a fraction of the reporters on the street doing this work than we used to have 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. It's really unbelievably, it's quantifiable. And actually, the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago came out with a data report about the collapse of specifically local newspapers. They're saying there's only 1,800 local community newspapers left in the entire United States. 1,800. How many towns are there? Anyway, but by 2020, there's only going to be half of that. So my idea was, I mean, at KABU, a lot of this book came from my experience as a news director at KABU because I've worked with hundreds of the most incredible people. I'm going to get all in my feelings now. hundreds of the most incredible people from all walks of life, people from all over the world, a range of genders, people with different experiences. And I just love empowering everyday people. Everyday people have wisdom. You don't have to go get a college degree or a master's degree to be able to be a journalist, but we seem to think so, right? So I put this whole thing together, and that is what this book is. It's chapter by chapter. This is what journalism is. The goal is that even if you never become a journalist or don't even have the vision for doing that, these are tools that can help you understand the journalism you're reading. What's fake news? The fake news fact-checking chapter is my favorite. But this is what I want to get to about that title, citizen journalist. So late last year, I started sending digital copies of the manuscript to people in the local community and saying, would you take a look at this and let me know if it works for you or if it has problems? And Ana Del Rocio, who is a city staffer, she looked at this and she said, no, I'm not even going to open it because I don't want to have anything to do with having to be a citizen. Right. I took her critique because this is what I've been telling my publisher the whole time. I don't feel comfortable with this title, but I can't come up with a better.
What was her beef with the term citizen? I don't understand.
Because people from Spanish-speaking communities and all over the world are oppressed because, especially in the current day, they have to be citizens. They have to show citizenship papers.
Oh.
It's just the first blush of it, you know?
Oh, I see.
The
it's
first
a loaded
take
term.
On it. Yes, and it was off-putting to a really significant community of people that we want in this tent, right? So really, literally, at the 11th hour, I screenshotted her response and sent it to Joe at Microcosm. Joe pulled an all-nighter, okay? Researching that term, researching how it would impact the markets of people who would read this book, he came up with the term street journalism. I love Joe. He came up with that term. He pulled an all-nighter and just reframed the whole thing, did the changes inside the manuscript like a hero. And that's how we have street journalism. And actually, I like that term better. In the Midwest, there's a radio station that's experimenting with a commercial station that's experimenting with bringing everyday people into the newsroom on a, you know, one by one basis to show them what they do so that they can like maybe teach other everyday people how to do journalism. And they call it the J School of the Streets. I love that. That's what we do at KBOO. And that's really what this book is for. It's just about, you know, anyone. You don't have to be rich to be able to do this work.
You have a quote, I think it's in one of the last sections in the book. It's from Amy Goodman, who is on KBOO twice a day during the week. And her quote is, independent media can go to where the silence is and break the sound barrier, doing what corporate networks refuse to do. Another reason why street journalism is so important.
For real, honestly, in the KBOO newsroom, we put out the 5 o'clock news every weekday night. I've had multiple volunteers who were housing insecure, and one of my best reporters ever lived in a tent, okay? And I mean, what does it mean, street journalism? I mean, we're all out there, but it's also about access, and it's about, you don't have to, anyone can do this, right? Kids can too, and I just really want to rip that veil away and just demystify it. That's what this little orange book does, plus we're reclaiming orange for the people.
Now, can you tell us about your upcoming events for street journalists, where people can meet you and maybe get a signed copy of the book, starting with Powell's on Sunday, June 2nd?
Well, what I've got is Powell's on Sunday, June 2nd.
Okay.
Sure enough, if you're a journalist, it makes you neurotic to be interviewed by people who know. And I'm terrible at sending out press releases. I'm the worst capitalist in the world. So if you're out there, you're listening to me, and you love being somebody's, you know, publicist for free, contact me. But really what I have set up is my work at KBOO, right? I'm the interim news director here. And we're bringing people in. We're hammering up the training programs for everyday people to be trained for free here at KBOO. And I've got my Pals reading. So the Pals reading is going to be interesting because I don't want to really read from the book. I don't want to be... I'm not really an evangelist. I like to think I'm the Janie Appleseed of street journalism. But really what I want to do is talk to the audience and talk about them. You know, this is what you could do. That's what's interesting to me is you, you know, and who's listening to us now. Hopefully I will come up with more events. Stay tuned. But the Powell's event on Sunday, June 2nd is my big deal right now.
And the book has extremely valuable tips, exercises are in there, tools, technology, story ideas, everything somebody needs to start their street journalism career. We kind of touched on it in your last answer, Lisa, but when people finish the book or listen to you at the Powell's reading and they get inspired to become a street journalist, what can we offer them here at KWU? How can they get started here?
Thank you for asking. I'm actually working with the Pacifica Foundation to figure out ways to replicate journalism trainings at community radio stations across the country. There are many community radio stations that wish they had a news broadcast like KWU's. It's a 1 hour long, four nights a week, and then it's a half hour on Friday. I just have to point out our local, our Oregon Public Broadcasting doesn't do a 1 hour news broadcast. They don't do a local news broadcast. We do that. Okay. That's our niche. So one of the conundrums I had with writing this book was, if I put people in this space and I shake them up and I give them a lot of information, where are they going to take it? Right? So KBOO is one place. It's one place. You can come here and learn. We just set up the trainings for interviewing, news writing, audio field recording is going to wait. We're hoping to set up a whole team here at Portland-based KBOO, but, you know, regional, to help people. We're going to create a street squad of field reporters who can go out and cover demonstrations. Specifically, political demonstrations, I think, are a very key thing that's not really covered very well in any of our media. People will pick up big things, but not small things.
Not very objectively, I would say, based on the reporting in Portland here.
And another way of looking at that is that a lot of time, too often, there's not enough reporters to do the work at the commercial stations, but they don't know the issues, right? So they can't understand, you know, the most basic, why are all of these high school students chanting so many different things? Can't they just pick one good thing? You know what I'm saying? So, but for people that pick up this book, we would love to have you at KBOO. There are a couple other in Eugene. There's a station that's trying to set up a news broadcast in other places people are too. So the bottom line is, in our communities, we spent generations, hundreds of years really, organizing around issues. But we've got to start organizing around information. Really, that's the key.
So if you are listening and you are interested in, or you want to read Lisa's book first, or go to the Powell's reading and then come to KBOO, it's easy. There's a volunteer orientation. Just give us a call. Come into the station.
It's free.
and it's free, all those wonderful trainings. Well, yeah. Lisa Loving, thanks very much for being here in the neighborhood this morning.
Thanks, Mr. Jones.
No relation. No relation indeed. Well, that's all for this episode of Mr. Jones's Neighborhood here on KBOO Community Radio, or KBOO Neighborhood Radio, as I like to call it. If you missed any part of the show, would just like to hear Ty, Ryan, and Lisa again, you can stream this episode and previous episodes online at kboo.fm/program/Mr. Jones's Neighborhood, the two S's in Mr. Jones, or just search for it on the KBOO website. That's all for this episode of Mr. Jones's Neighborhood. A big neighborhood thank you to Ty Curtis and Ryan Stadler for joining us live in the KBOO studios, playing as the Ty Curtis duo. Ty Curtis, Dave Scher, and the band, Jerry Jaquez, I hope, is back by then. Ryan will be there at the Waterfront Blues Festival. They'll be there Saturday, July 6th from 5 to 6 p.m. If you can't be there in person, you can listen to all 4 days of the festival here on KBOO over the radio airwaves online at kboo.fm or streaming through the KBOO phone app. And a big thank you to Lisa Loving, author of the new book Street Journalist, Understand and Report the News in Your Community. Lisa will be reading at Powell's Books in downtown Portland this Sunday, June 2nd at 7:30 p.m. I can't leave without giving a big thank you to our live music engineer, Jeffrey Hunt, to his assistant today, DJ OG Wiz, to Keith Bloom for help getting all this organized, to our board up in the air room, the inimitable, unparalleled, unindictable, Sonia P. Berry. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying, hope it's always a beautiful day in your neighborhood. Let's end the show with the title cut from Ty Curtis's Blame Me CD, and then we'll fade that into one from his blues guitar compadre, Christone Kingfish Ingram, Outside of This Town, from Kingfish's just-released and long-anticipated debut CD titled, oddly enough, Kingfish.
She said, but I think I'm good for something. She wished me dead. I can tell you one thing, it's how Sundays flow. You got
just one assumption. Out the door you go. Don't blame me. Can't you see?
Out of this town. outside of this town.